you can go stick your head in the sand, put your butt right up in the air to be kicked, or you can just keep battling it out every day when times get hard. Very few people go through life where they don't have to go through adversity, but adversity is what builds strength.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ron LeGrand is a nationally recognized real estate expert and trainer with 39 years of experience in both residential and commercial properties and a 30-year history of hard money lending and brokering. His experiences include personally buying and selling over 3,500 single-family homes and over $300 million in commercial property deals with student partners all across America. His 54-year marriage to his wife, Beverly, has produced 4 children, 9 grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. People constantly ask him why he continues to teach, and he just says, first, make no mistakes about it. I get paid well for teaching. It's not a mercy mission, and I'm not a nonprofit organization. But secondly, I thrive on this work because golfing, fishing, and diving just gets old. Making millionaires never gets old. It's fun, and Ron loves doing it. Ron, welcome to the show.
You know, I'm going to have to update that bio, Sam. It's a little out of date. For example, my great-grandchildren are up to 14 now. They just keep spreading.
Well, congratulations on that. That's something you should be proud of. Thank you. The same questions I ask everybody that comes on the show is, you know, where'd you start? Where are you now? And where'd you get there? Can you give us just a quick, brief overview of that?
Well, I started as a rope mechanic back in 1982. I was actually running a service station. I was in control of it, but I still had to do most of the work. Inside in, you know, back then we actually washed windows and checked under hoods and pumped gas for folks. But I was actually doing that as well as running the station. I was mainly doing most of the mechanical work. Just getting by, Sam, barely making a living. And just got to the point to where I didn't want to do it anymore and started looking around and found real estate and went to my first seminar. And 3 weeks later, I did my first deal. And it didn't take me long to get out of that and get into real estate. But it took me 7 years to get my legs under me and figure out how to actually make money and not make a bigger mess than I started with. And because I bought a lot of properties during that time without using my money or my credit, and still do today. One of the biggest things I teach all of our clients is we do not go into banks and borrow money. We do not guarantee debt. That's prohibited in my world. And in fact, the reason that I tell them that is to, you know, save your financial statement and save your credit in case you want to actually do something that's worth the risk, such as commercial property. And I really believe that. That's what I've lived by all these years. I'm not saying I've always took my own advice, because 2008, I was there, you know, with 32 projects going on simultaneously in 9 different states and $50 million worth of guaranteed debt. You can imagine how that turned out. So, you know, looking back, I wish I'd have took my own advice, but who knows? Who knew there was a recession coming? You know, a lot of people today, if you talk to them, knew it was coming today, but not back then. Anyway, been teaching a long time now, actually in my 40th year, teaching people the single family house business and those who are interested in commercial business. And in fact, just as fate would have it, the last 2 days I spent with my commercial mastermind group, which is a group of people who meet 3 times a year with me, and we partner on commercial deals of all types. And then here we are today talking about commercial. So timing is good. It's still fresh on my mind. And at my age, that don't last long.
Ron, that's fascinating. You've got a lot here to talk about. You know, when you say do not borrow and don't guarantee debt, you know, what do you mean by that? Is that more on the single family side that you're talking about, buying subject to and lease options and things like that?
I'm not saying that no one should guarantee debt to do commercial properties. I'm just saying it shouldn't be you. You know, you can always get somebody to get the loan or some kind of a piece of the action. But I am absolutely vigilant about not guaranteeing debt, because that is one of the biggest mistakes that people make in this business. We never know when things are going to turn around, and anybody who lived through 2008 can attest to that. And when you guarantee debt, you risk 3 things. You risk your credit, you risk your assets, and you risk your marriage. So it darn well better be worth it. And there is no single family house worth risking those things when we can buy them all day long without using our money or credit. So again, save your credit for when you might need it. Plus, every time you guarantee a loan, it screws up your financial statement. More debt on your credit report, the less lendable you are for something that might be worthy of lending, and which is probably going to be a commercial project if and when you decide that it's worth the risk. The older I get, the less risk I want to take, Sam. It's really that simple. Because I've taken them all, and I've got beaten up and bloodied, and I got arrows in my back, and my pioneering days are over, And since I spent most of my life learning how to operate without guaranteeing debt, there's no reason for me to ever do it again.
I see. You hit on something interesting there where you said there's always someone who is willing to guarantee the loan other than you. And do you see that playing out in the commercial side as well? Or is it more
playing out all over the place, playing out all over the country? You know, many of them. I mean, I'm in a mastermind group myself with a bunch of commercial people in it. And very common for people to go get somebody else to go get the construction loan or go refinance the debt to get the property ready to turn around to put permanent financing on it. And then a lot of those don't require personal guarantees and non-recourse debt. So the whole goal is to get it and get it ready to refinance, which might take a couple, 3 years. But the minute you guarantee that debt, you're a slave to the bank and you're the one that's at risk. That's all I'm saying. Many, many people, there's a whole country full of people that are qualified that would love to guarantee the debt. Think about it. They don't have to put up the money. They just have to get the loan because they can. So it's free money. It's an infinity rate of return on the investment. It's not hard to convince people to do that if the property makes sense and if the project is properly packaged and the odds are really good that it's going to succeed.
Let's dive into that for a minute. I think that's a little understood, and especially as we're scaling and really getting our feet under us in the commercial world. Again, the name of the show is How to Scale. So as we're, you know, as people are growing into their commercial assets, I think getting other people as loan guarantors on is kind of a little understood process. How do you see that being? I'll just ask the question. How do you see that working out for the loan guarantor? Like, how do they get paid? What is their typical terms that you see being worked out? I mean, is there kind of a baseline thing we should expect?
Well, usually they get a piece of the action, but it's a small piece. It ain't like they're going to get half the piece for guaranteeing the debt, because there's still got to be equity coming in on top of the debt. They're going to get a pretty good chunk if they're bringing equity in. So the guarantor is going to get some piece, but we could talk for hours on that. There's a million different ways to do it. My answer to that question, Sam, would be I'd ask them, what do you think it would take to make it worth you guaranteeing the debt?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, instead of me making the offer. I learned a long time ago, ye who makes offer first has a big tennis shoe in my mouth, Sam. Never, ever, ever tell someone what you'll do till they tell you what they'll do.
Right.
You know, for most of the time, they're going to give you a better deal than you were about to give them.
Sure, sure. And I know you said every deal is different. Can you give us some example structures on that?
Well, let's say I'm going after a construction loan to build a subdivision. Okay, first of all, it's a short-term loan.
Right.
So, not going to be out there very long because somebody's going to build some houses on it and take that loan out pretty soon. So if it's a short-term play, you know, maybe 10% of the net profit on that project having nothing to do with the vertical construction, just that project from beginning to end to get it ready to sell the lots or whatever the index strategy is going to be. You know, maybe 10% of the net profit on it, something like that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
I just pay them a fixed fee.
Sure. Have you seen it where people just take a percentage of the debt that they've guaranteed? So if they guarantee $10 million, they get, you know, 1 or 3% or whatever on an annual basis. Has anything like that ever come out?
You can do it that as well, as long as you structure it so that they get paid when you get paid.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's a key point. That's a key point, because you don't want to have to owe that 1% on a $10 million loan before the project's ever producing an income.
People get themselves in a mess all the time by making promises they think they can keep, but Murphy steps in and makes sure that they don't get to keep them when they want to keep them. So you should never promise money that you don't have. Promise it when you get it, they get it. And that's the only way I'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
Experience tells me that, Sam.
Right, right. Yeah. And let's talk about that experience. You said in 2008, you had $50 million in guaranteed debt. How did that work out?
Not very good. Not very good. You know, after 2008, money dried up. I mean, there was no money worldwide. I mean, it went right around. I've never seen anything like it. And nobody, you know, most of the, you're in this world, most of the population don't even have any idea what happened in 2008. Okay, they knew there was a crash. But if they weren't in the money game, they have no idea what kind of effect it had on the rest of the world.
Right.
I was working on a project. I just built a retail center in Dallas, and I literally had that thing half not formally, but committed to half of it to be leased up. I went down to get money out of my own credit line in my own bank just to do the inside so I could complete the leases. They wouldn't give it to me. They point blank told me, we got it, but we're not turning loose of it. I said, well, if you don't turn loose of it, you're going to get this project back. They said, we can't do anything about it. And they finally got the project back. And all the rest of them, for that matter, many of the banks took them back because there was no exit strategy. It's one thing that the money dried up, Sam, but the exit strategies all dried up. The whole world changed. I had 5 subdivisions ready to go vertical with houses and ready to sell lots. Now, all of a sudden, there were nobody buying houses. There was nobody building. It stopped dead in its tracks. Houses and everything else, unless it was a single-use building they were in the middle of. You know, most people would not have any idea what that happened, the degree of that. And that went worldwide. I mean, the whole world was running scared. And that was it. It was fear. Banks didn't know what was going to go on. Nobody knew what was going to happen. So they just wouldn't turn loose of the money. So I worked for 3 years trying to get it resolved. And finally, when it all said and done, I realized for two years, I made payments on that money out of my pocket. And I finally realized this is stupid. Projects are never going to get done. And by the way, I was right. To this very day, I doubt that any of them are completely finished. So some of them I gave back. Some of them, they wouldn't take them back. Because I had personally guaranteed the debt, you know, and if they take it back, they can't come after me for a deficiency. That's a deed in lieu of foreclosure, which most people don't know either.
Right.
Now, I put all the money in LLCs, but I still personally guaranteed it. So I knew they could come, and some of them did. It resulted in about $29 million worth of judgments, which, you know, are still hanging around today. Fortunately, I knew how to protect myself, but, you know, it wasn't a fun time. Think of all those legal fees as well. And looking back, I would have probably just saved that money and just say, okay, I'll grant you a judgment. I'll consent because I know I'm going to lose.
Right.
You get money from a bank. What's your defense if you don't pay it back? Well, there was a recession. Well, that's tough. You know, you're going to get a judgment against you. So anyway, I've lived with those all these years. And, you know, so far it hasn't caused me any great loss, but a lot of lessons learned back then. And all because I guaranteed debt. All because I guaranteed debt. If I hadn't guaranteed debt, then that wouldn't have been an issue. When banks loan people money, they take a risk. And unfortunately, they don't always work out. So, you know, I didn't start the recession. I don't feel real guilty about it. Because there's really no way I could have got out of it. There was no exit strategy on these properties. I had 5 subdivisions ready to build houses on, man. I mean, they were pretty. 5 different cities. And then all of a sudden, there was no house building. So, lessons learned.
How does someone, and we talked on this briefly, where you said, you know,
I should be getting some sympathy or something for that story, shouldn't I?
I'm in shock and awe. You get lots of sympathy for that story. I mean, that's painful. That's painful. If you're listening to this, like you're learning, this is a free lesson from someone else that paid tens of millions of dollars to teach it to you.
You know what's even more painful?
What's that?
There were several $100 million worth of net profit projected in these projects. That all went away. That's more painful than the process of, you know, fighting with the banks.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of questions that we probably won't get to, but maybe, you know, this will spark some interest in the listeners, which is, you know, how did you protect yourself? Things like that, such that, you know, in the end, the judgments may be hanging out there, but they're not taking away, you know, your last breadcrumb. But I guess as we move into commercial assets, I know you said you can have other people guarantee the debt. I mean, is there, before we even get into that, let's ask about where we are today. I mean, do you feel like where we are today is anywhere eerily similar to where we were in 2007, 2008?
In many ways, I feel like the way things are going, there can't help but be a downturn somewhere in the future. When you start raising taxes, I just look back for crying out loud. What's happened every single time they raise taxes? All right. Inflation starts going up. Economy starts going down. People quit investing. Companies stop investing. I mean, it's common sense to me, but I guess it isn't all that common to those in power. So, yeah, there's going to be a correction. But if it's going to be like 08, I doubt it. Because one thing, this regime will throw money out there that we don't have to fix anything. But sooner or later, it's going to catch up. So, and then, you know, look at what happened in the fuel prices, which is a domino effect on everything else. And I mean, it just does not make sense that we cannot not have another downturn. Now, the good news is that's not bad news. That's good news, because having downturns is probably the best thing that happened to real estate investors.
The best thing that happened?
That's probably the best thing that can happen.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah. What happens when you have a downturn in the market? Well, there's chaos, and wealthy people run toward the chaos and take advantage of the bargains that they didn't create, but take advantage of. What happened in the last one, right? So sellers want to sell more, and buyers, it's harder for them to buy. So if you're in the middle and you're providing the product that they can use or move into, then you're in a very good position. So if any time that I can buy for less, it's a good thing. So, you know, in fact, I heard Donald Trump say one time, right after about 09, he says, man, I'm buying like a bat out of hell. And I've never forgot that. Okay. If Trump was buying like a bat out of hell, we should be buying like a bat out of hell. Advantage, but without guaranteeing debt. So if you don't guarantee debt, what's the worst that can happen to you, Sam?
They take the asset back.
Correct. The asset that you didn't guarantee and does not affect your financial statement or your personal assets.
Right.
So my world, we work risk-free by not guaranteeing debt.
Mm.
Most people lose a little money, we'll make it up on the next one.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I mean, you know, I think that there's some other pieces to this, especially as people are syndicating a lot of these deals.
Yeah.
You know, you lose the asset. You also lose your investors' money, which is horrible. And, you know.
Which I did. I lost a lot of investors' money. And frankly, that hurts more than anything that has to do with banks. I just don't feel sorry for the banks. That's what business they're in. But, you know, when people invest money in you and you can't return it, that's not a good feeling. What would one do? The only thing I could have done was nothing.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point is that, you know, you said you made debt payments, you know, for what you say, 2 years
after the
bank started not, you know, the liquidity dried up.
Yeah.
And you continued to make those payments. And I regret to even say this really on the air, but it's one of those things that I've heard this story repeated multiple times where if people had saved their dry powder and just said, hey, guys, like, wait, time out. Like, I'm not giving you another cent. We're going to keep these cash reserves somewhere else and we're going to work this out, but I'm done paying you.
Yeah. Well, they all wanted to work it out, Sam, as long as I'd give them money. Okay. It's amazing how every proposal that came at me were made. I go, send us money and we'll do this. No, I've sent enough money. I'm not sending any more. Besides, there's no way. The only thing they could do was take the property back. And that is the last thing they want to do. You know that. You know what it does to a bank when they take a property back. I mean, it's already bad. And now that would make it worse. And that's one reason they didn't take it back. There's still a defaulted asset on their books. Like a lot of them, you know, I had a pretty strong financial statement. And I think a lot of them just thought they'd come after me personally, which many of them tried, didn't get very far. But fortunately, I understood estate planning and asset protection starting back in 2000, teaching it ever since to some degree. So I was smart enough to hang around the right people back then before this thing happened, or I would have totally been wiped out at start all over. Good lesson.
Goodness, yes, that's a great lesson. My gosh, it pains me to hear it because I've known many close friends that have gone through the same thing, you know, that you've described here.
And well, you know what they say, don't you? When things don't work out for you, you can always serve as a warning to others.
Right. I guess that's the highlight. The highlight. My goodness gracious. Yeah.
I'm sorry for me here. Okay. I'm not on welfare. I'm doing okay. And still doing deals, still doing commercial deals, and still back. It didn't affect my ability to keep moving forward. Just slowed me down a little bit back in there. But, you know, that's the difference in attitude from wealthy people than people who aren't. You can go stick your head in the sand, which put your butt right up in the air to be kicked. Or you can just keep battling it out every day when times get hard. Very few people go through life where they don't have to go through adversity. But adversity is what builds strength. It's what builds the ability to get through this stuff without having to take you out mentally. And it builds grit and also puts you in a position where problems don't bother you like they used to bother you because you know there's always going to be a solution for them. Like Willie Mays said, it's not my life, it's not my wife, why worry?
Right. That's absolutely it. That's absolutely it. Yeah. Probably as you become more seasoned in this business, you probably stress out a lot less.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not much that bothers me anymore. There's one gorilla that I always try to take care of, and that's the IRS. I really don't want to be fighting them. But even the IRS can only get so much. But I don't have a problem with the IRS. I don't want anybody that. They get their share of money out of me. I can tell you that right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do want to focus in a little bit on what your process was. I know you said, you know, essentially I'm paraphrasing here, but got back on the horse and just kept duking it out, you know, moving forward. But as opportunities begin to present themselves, what did it look like kind of as you shifted from damage control on the guaranteed debt side to now I see opportunity? In what asset classes were those and kind of how did you position yourself to move forward having had such a...
I've always been in the single family house business since the day I got into this business, and I still am, and I still teach it. You know, I've got multimillionaires all over the world that came through Planet Ron to get there. So I just kept teaching that, kept doing that. But I didn't buy any more commercial for years after that. I mean, it just took the energy out of me to buy more commercial. Then development, the D word was a nasty word when you go to lenders. They don't want anything to do with any kind of development. I don't blame them. Or, you know, took years to get through that. And honestly, what happened back then, Sam, has changed the way that lenders lend money on commercial property all the way, all around the world. It's changed the rules on residential. So it was just a correction. If you look back at history, they happen about every 60 or 70 years. It just happened to happen in 2008. My timing was off. But you have to keep making money. You have to keep making a living. You have to do whatever you can do to keep the cash flow coming in. And there were some tough times. I'm telling you, right after the crash of September of 08, we laid off at our company, Global Publishing. We laid out about off about half the staff in one day. And that was not a fun day. We took an 80% drop in revenue, 80% almost overnight. And yet we just kept plugging out for day by day and making deals with our creditors. And ultimately got them all paid. But, you know, we pissed off some of them along the way, but they got over it. Because honestly, there's not a whole lot else we could do except throw our hands up and quit. Mm. So we got through that, and the company's doing well today. You know, I'm doing just fine. In fact, I got a hobby now. I'm working on classic cars. I got several classic cars. I sure ain't doing it for the money, I can tell you that. But here's what I know. Everybody has to have something to look forward to. And since my businesses are running without me, pretty much, I spend time doing something that I like doing. And I still teach. I still create. I still lightly participate, but I very rarely make any decisions. Because I also learned one of the biggest lessons along the way is to get out of your own way, let other people do what they do best so you can do what you want to do, and that's make decisions, and then pretty soon delegate that. And I've done that. I've delegated making decisions. I make very, very few decisions in any of my businesses. So you could say that I'm retired, but I don't kind of like that word. Maybe I'm laid off for a while. You know, this COVID thing changed everything. So people get used to working at home, and I never thought that I would. I mean, I've always been an office kind of guy, but I go there now. I got nothing to do. So you know, I find stuff to do that interests me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that brings up the one thing that many of us aim for in this business, which is time and financial freedom.
Yeah.
You know, those are two things that if you can buy your own time back, and you get to do it as you please. You know, maybe it's doing podcasts, maybe it's doing coaching calls, maybe it's on your mastermind groups. But those are things you enjoy, and you get to spend your time how you want. And that's really, I think, the ultimate success in the end is having time and, you know, financial freedom. So that's awesome. Ron, I've really enjoyed this. Let's jump here into the final four questions, unless you got something else you want to add before we kick into those.
If you have 2 or 3 days.
Sure, man. I'm learning a ton here today. So if you carry on, you got something else on top of mind.
No, I don't have anything else to add. I mean, I can say that anybody that's interested in getting into the single family house business, learning how I do it. You know, I've done about 1,000 rehabs, Sam, and wholesale deals. I can't even count them, but today I'm in a terms business with houses, buy them on terms and sell them on terms. So I don't have to go through all that reading, make 10 times more money. If that interests anybody, I have a hour and 15 minute online training on that at ronlegrand.com/terms. That's LEGRAND. Nobody spells my name right the first time. ronlegrand.com/terms. Go find out what I do if you're interested. They'll give you instructions on what to do there. And commercial, I do a commercial boot camp twice a year. You can go on my website, ronlegrand.com, and find out all the information about that you want. And frankly, I think, like you, that everyone should be looking at commercial. The good news is you don't take one or two deals to set you up for life. And that's generational wealth that will pass on beyond you. When you learn to do that, take away the risk, which is what I do. It's, you kind of look at it like a side business. I don't want anybody to stop residential to do commercial. I don't want anybody to cut off cash flow. But I'm telling you, just evidenced by the deals that we are looking at and doing with this group that I had in my room yesterday. I mean, they don't do anything but sit online and look for deals. We do the rest. Okay. And I even put up the money when necessary when I partner with students on deals. But I mean, I think everybody should be looking at some type of commercial. And the first step is to get educated on what that means and find out what really interests you, and then find out, you know, the big myths. I got to have a lot of money, and I got to have a big financial statement. I got to have good credit, or I can't do commercial. None of that is true. None of it is true.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's absolutely, absolutely something that one will include all of those links in the show notes. People can find that, and then they can really come to you and learn more about what you mean when you say none of that is true. So we'll put those in the show notes and share that with everyone. I think that's absolutely vital and valuable information. Final four questions are this, Ron. If I gave you just $20,000 today, It's all you got to invest in real estate. What would you do with it and why?
Have I been educated in any way yet?
No. 20 grand starting out fresh today.
Okay, well, the first thing I'd do with it is get a little bit of training to figure out what it is I want to do with the rest of the money left over after I get trained. Because if I don't, the 20 grand's going to go away and I'm going to wind up with nothing. Ye who tries to get into this business or any other business with absolutely no training is going to learn some very ugly lessons. I don't care what business it is. It's foolish to enter a business and just start spending money and not have any idea what you're spending it on. Now, I've had 6 restaurants, Sam, and I've always said, you cannot learn how to run a restaurant by eating there. You got to get behind the scene. You got to get the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you got to see how the business works. There is no business that works like it looks like it works from an outsider looking in.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you hit on a key point there. My wife and I have made that mistake a couple of times. It's always worked out in the end, but we have solemnly vowed to never get into a business that we know nothing about. Because we learned the lessons the hard way, and what we didn't know, we paid for with our checkbook. And in the end, they all turned out to be profitable ventures. But man, the learning curve was longer and more expensive than it needed to be.
Well, you're forgiven because you're a man, and the last thing a man is going to do is follow instructions anyway. And if the wheel's round, we can make it rounder, right? Right, Sam?
Sure, why not?
I mean, it's working perfectly. It must be fixed.
I like that. I like that. Question number 2 is this. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it? And I think we spent the bulk of the show probably talking about that. Maybe you got some other nugget.
The biggest mistake is one of the biggest mistakes, they don't take time to get trained. And then the second biggest mistake is they don't do anything with the training. Okay. Attending seminars and learning ain't going to do squat for you if you don't start implementing what you learn piece by piece. And that's one thing I can say about our company. We've got all the implementation in place for them. All they got to step in and follow the tracks, and we got people to hold their hand along the way. So it makes many of our customers so successful. You can't do anything without the training, but then you got to implement it. And then along the way, you got to get systemized and get out of the way and learn to delegate and let other people do what they do best. And most of the time, they'll do it better than you. And even if they don't, they do it good enough. That's a hard lesson for a man to learn, by the way. It took me 25 years to figure that out. And things changed drastically when I started getting out of my own way. I was a control freak like every other man, but in time I learned. In fact, the older I get, the less I don't want to do anything, Sam. If it has to be done, I want somebody else to do it.
Understood. Very good. I like it. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Me? Well, I've been making the world a better place for almost 40 years now by helping other people take control of their lives and get out of financial traps and get to the point to where, you know, the biggest thing we have to work with people is not teaching them real estate. It's actually fixing what's up here, because they come to us with all kinds of hangups and past histories and guilts and low self-esteem sometimes. And, you know, we got to fix that along the way, because if we can't change your thinking, we can't change your lifestyle. So the thinking has got to be changed. But to be honest, my experience about the only way that thinking is going to get changed permanently is checks. Okay. Till you get a check, it's all seminar crap, isn't it? Huh? Hard to get them checks as fast as we can. And once you get that check, you know, you can't say, well, it ain't going to work here. It ain't going to work for me. And too many people listen to the dream stealer sound. They just take in everything they hear. They just consume and assume it's reality. And truthfully, most of it is junk. I have a t-shirt that says the whole world is full of crap, which means don't believe anything you hear until you verify that it's true, because the whole world is full of crap. People tell you all kind of junk, and it's always broke people feeding you a line of crap. Broke people trying to tell you how to get rich. How in the hell would they know?
I love it. I love it. Ron, I know you said this already, but just to reiterate here, because it's the last and final question, how can people learn more about you and get in touch with you?
RonLegrand.com/terms. And there's a whole seminar on the pretty house business, as we call it. And beautiful homes and beautiful neighborhoods without having to rehab them or raising money and all of that. And then my website's got a ton of free stuff on it. And frankly, my YouTube channel will keep you busy till you're on Social Security if you're not already. I mean, there's just hundreds of videos on my YouTube channel. So I'm not hard to find.
That's awesome. Ron, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
All right, Sam. My pleasure, sir.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.